Now we're underway. I waited for the guy to give me accounting. So good morning, everybody. Who went to the party last night? Who watched the Block NZ instead? Who went to the gym this morning? Who knows who won the Block, right? Come on. Yeah? Who won the Block? Ben and Libby. Guess who I saw at 5:20 this morning walking to the gym? Yes. Didn't look like he was going to the gym, I can tell you that right now. No, I think Rachel was in, yeah, someone didn't make any money whatsoever on the Block NZ last night. So hi, my name's Chris Auld, I know plenty of you. I work for a company called Intergen. Used to be based out of Wellington, but I live in Rotorua now and just get on the plane every week. I'm also what's called a Microsoft Regional Director, so there's a couple of us in New Zealand. I don't work for Microsoft, sometimes feels like I do. We do a bunch of work, sort of community type work, and in particular, sort of liaising and feeding back into the Microsoft mothership back up in Redmond. So I have sort of traveled to Redmond every sort of 4 to 8 weeks for the past 6 years. So I have a lot of air miles. So we are going to talk a bit about Windows Azure SQL Database today, and it's sort of a deep dive primarily around scale out and federations. I do assume at least a little bit of a priori knowledge about SQL Database, so I'm not going to go into it in detail about, you know, how it works. Can I assume that most people do have a rough idea of how it works? If not, you'll pick it up as we go along. So, I'm going to do a bit of a sort of overview of what we're going to talk about. We're going to go through some tips and tricks around sort of design and development for primarily scale out in SQL Database using federations. And we'll talk about how we pick our federation model, so basically applying relational modeling to this idea of federations. We'll talk about reference tables, central tables, federated tables, and we'll talk a bit about some keys. We'll then talk a bit about admin, so how we go about querying our database, so what is the programming model to work with these federated databases, how do we manage schema and so forth once we are federated. And then finally, we'll talk a bit about sort of the vNext stuff, so what's coming from the SQL Azure team. I do a lot of work, actually, with the SQL Azure team in Redmond, do a lot of research for them, which often involves picking up all of the other cloud vendors' platforms and seriously kicking the tires. So I may let slip occasionally with some insight as to the relative performance of all of the various cloud players. Suffice to say that I think the primary reason for the massive growth in NoSQL databases is that it is very hard to do high-performance relational databases in Amazon Web Services. Anyone use Amazon Web Services? Yeah? I.O.? There we go. Right, so I didn't have to say it. Beautiful. Okay, so I will slip into the nomenclature problems here. This thing used to be called SQL Azure, and then the Windows Azure team said, oh, actually, we need to call everything what it is. And this is a database that we're going to call it SQL Database. So I will slip between SQL Azure, SQL Database throughout the day. They are exactly the same thing. So scalability in the cloud. The cloud is an interesting proposition because it really, one, the internet these days demands massive scale apps, right? Because you are, you know, really pitching potentially to a global audience. You may need to build an app that can scale to many tens, many hundreds of thousands, millions of users. Cloud computing is a great way of dealing with this because cloud computing basically has, for our purposes, infinite capacity on tap, right? The reason it's infinite capacity on tap is the ability of the cloud data center to soak up your credit card, right, is effectively unbounded, right? Right? Your credit limit probably runs out before the data center runs out of capacity, right? So there's orders of magnitude more burst capacity than you really ever see in an enterprise data center, right? That is probably the key sort of, if I was to say, what is the key pitch point for public cloud computing? It is suitability for highly elastic apps because you have massive amounts of burst capacity on tap. And that is simply economically infeasible to do in an on-premise environment, right? You simply can't have stuff sitting around doing nothing just in case you might need it. Public cloud vendors can. Why? Because they're like a utility, right? If you think about the utility network, say the power network, right, because we've got these massive generators, Right? And because, you know, we've got millions of customers, they can actually afford to have that bit of headroom available, you know, ready to turn on in terms of their peaking plants. So, cloud apps are also really driven by that idea of economics. So they run on commodity hardware, right? They really are driving for sort of price commoditization. And so what they do is they kind of eschew your typical sort of concepts around high availability for database. So if you think about how you'd normally do database high availability, right, you're probably doing clustered servers against SAN backends. People doing that, right? Who can tell me sort of cheap and easy? No, right? So not cheap. So, you know, the cloud is all about using commodity hardware, right? And then they achieve sort of high availability through other approaches. So commodity hardware, have some sort of high availability. That way, if the commodity hardware craps itself, no problem. Right? And it really is all about that idea of elasticity. So the ability to turn stuff on and turn stuff off, right, is in many ways unique to the cloud, right? Because when you turn it off, you no longer have that capital cost. And that's really easy for the entirety of the application except the data tier. Right? So, data scale is hard. Data scale's always been hard. Right? For small scale scenarios, the easiest approach to data scale is to scale up. Right? Buy a bigger database server. It's what we do on premise. Right? Need more capacity? Buy a bigger database server. Throw more RAM at it. Throw more virtual CPU cores at it. Right? Bob's your auntie's living lover. We're good to go. For larger scale scenarios, it's a whole lot harder. There are massive diseconomies of scale in computing. Right? And what I mean by that is if you go and try and buy a 64-way server, anyone from Unisys here? Fuge? Yeah, right? You guys are selling me a 64-way server, eh? Well, not on my credit, right? Because one 64-way server is a whole lot more expensive than 64 one-way servers. Right, so we really need to have some way of doing this scale out. And at the end of the day, we will at some point reach a limit. Right? You just can't buy a big enough box. You run into shared, you know, basically when you're on a single box, contention is everything. Right? You know, with databases, I'm preaching to the choir here, right? Contention and locks and shared resources are really everything that kills scale for us. So really the only way to build these massive scale apps is to achieve some sort of linear scale out. So, you know, the canonical three-tier app, you know, it understands scale out in the web and app tiers, right? Stateless scale out, piece of cake. The data tier is much harder because the data tier is, by definition, stateful, right? So it is very hard to scale out those stateful data tiers. So the goal with federations in SQL Azure is to basically extend that scale out pattern into the data tier, right? And it's basically picking up the sort of the database sharding pattern, right? And it is supporting it in, you know, the tool itself. So who's built some sharded databases before? A few people. So sharding is basically chopping up portions of your database and spreading it out across multiple database servers. The beauty of the cloud, of course, is that you've got database servers on tap, right? So particularly well suited for this. Right? So basically what we do is we spread our data out across a whole lot of database servers, right? And that way we take advantage of that, you know, cloud computing capacity on tap. So what does this let us do? We can go beyond our single DB to potentially scale out to, you know, hundreds, thousands of, you know, SQL Azure, SQL database nodes. You know, think of those as individual servers sitting inside the data center. So you literally can harness the power of thousands of database servers on tap, roughly $5 a database server per month. So it doesn't cost you very much. Right? It's elastic, so we can turn it on and we can turn it off. Right? We're not being stuck with any sort of capital cost. We don't have to have it powered on and looked after all the time. Lots of options around multi-tenancy, right? So we can do everything from running high tenant density, so multiple tenants in a single database, right, through to potentially a single database per tenant, through to, you know, much lower density where we actually need, you know, a tenant is so large that we actually need to spread that tenant out across multiple databases. And actually, we could run exactly the same app, right? And support all of those approaches. So, you know, a tiny customer goes in a high density deployment approach, a much bigger customer goes in a really, really low density approach. And at the end of the day, it's just SQL Server, right? This is not a NoSQL database. You are not, right, throwing all of your stored procedures out, and what else do you want to throw out? Oh, atomicity, consistency, isolation, and durability. Those are kind of nice, right? People do in the room tend to agree that relational database management systems are quite nice, right? NoSQL databases are kind of the poor man's choice, right? Because the poor man has to take that choice, because the poor man can't do high-performance databases very easily on many of these cloud vendors' platforms. So, let's talk a bit about federations and SQL Azure. So, exactly how these things work. So, we have a concept of a master database. So, think of we'll do the typical sales, you know, customer order lines type of database. So, we've got a sales database, right? And we have what we call a federation route. So, when I go and do create new database, right, I end up with what's ultimately going to be my federation route. We do not want to be putting lots of load on that database. That is effectively, you know, that's our single point of failure. We can put data in there, but that data should be things like metadata, very infrequently touched, right? Very infrequently looked at, very infrequently written to. Then what we do is we create a thing called a federation. So think of those rectangular boxes there, they're a federation. And we can have one or more federations, and think of sort of federations as almost like a sort of a dimension in sort of your data space, right? Because your federation effectively sort of defines a set of common tables, right? You know, so if we think of, you know, the typical customer scenario, online e-commerce scenario, you might have a federation called the customer federation, right? So effectively, what we're going to do there is we're going to slice all of the data that relates to customers up sort of into blocks of customers somehow. So those are federations. We then have federation members. And a federation member is just another SQL Azure database. Right. And that federation member contains a subset of your data. And by subset, I mean it contains one or more atomic units, where an atomic unit is the data that is keyed to the smallest sort of key grain that you can get for your federation key. So if we think about doing the customer federation, okay, we're going to partition up our customers. We're going to partition them up by customer ID. Okay, what is our atomic unit? It's all of the data relating to a single customer ID. All right, what does that mean? It means that, you know, if I chuck into here customer orders, you know, order header, order lines, right? It means that as small as I can go is basically put all of a customer's information in a single database. That's probably golden, you know, for me going to an e-commerce store, right? So if the customer is Chris Auld, we're probably good to go. If the customer's Walmart, right, we might have some challenges, i.e. we might actually, you know, that atomic unit might need to be, you know, sharded further. Okay, so once we've set this federation up, SQL Azure then supports basically changing the partition structure while we're online. So what we can do is we basically can tell it to split some of those federation members. So a federation member currently contains 100 atomic units, 100 customers. We can tell it to split, right? And it will, as an online operation, effectively chop that database in half, right? Push the relevant records out to the two new database, new federation members, then get rid of the old one and bring those two new members into our federation. And it's always capable of routing your requests to the appropriate database member. Right? And this happens entirely online. Right? So basically, you can be applying transaction load the whole time through. Question here. Yep, absolutely. The split can occur entirely under transactional load. right? So now what will happen is there's a split second where effectively it needs to change. You're effectively being routed through to these Federation members. And it will at some point disconnect you, right, and force you to reconnect, and you'll then get connected to the new Federation member. But if you have transactions in flow, right, it'll roll back those transactions appropriately. So you have strong consistency throughout that process. Does that answer your question? So yeah, a transaction may get whacked, right, may get disconnected, but it will be appropriately rolled back, right, and you will have strong consistency throughout. So yeah, you need to deal with disconnections. Well, it depends on your application, right? So your application needs to be tolerant of disconnections from the database. So you get disconnected, that's cool, I'm going to go and try and reconnect. So we have a pattern. Any Intigen folks in the room? What's our library called? Diehard. Diehard.cs. Basically, it goes back and tries to reconnect. No, didn't have any luck, go back and try and reconnect again. Really important with SQL Azure, right, because SQL Azure does have sort of throttling mechanisms and all sorts of things that will occasionally whack your database connection, right? So you need to plan for that disconnectivity and go back and try again. But you have guaranteed consistency, right? So it is still, you know, a proper relational database with, you know, ACID transactional properties. We have another thing called drop that basically effectively chucks out Federation members. It's not merge, right? So while split picks up your data and moves it to separate databases, there is no merge to bring them back to a single database, right? There's just throw that one away and put that range back into sort of a blank database, right? Or stick that range, right, in one of the existing databases, but we throw the data away. And we'll talk a bit about how you achieve merge later on. It uses what we call data-dependent routing. So data-dependent routing is basically saying, I've got to go and hit an appropriate node based on the data I want to work with. All right, so that means that my app doesn't need to know about all the Federation members. You can build your app such that it can be completely ignorant about how many Federation members you happen to have, because when you run the use Federation statement, you're actually going to pass in the ID of the Federation key, right? So the Federation key value, and that's going to route you to the appropriate Federation member. And we'll see towards the end that there's been some significant work done recently to make this work a whole lot better with connection pools, right? Because it has been challenging doing connection pooling in these really, really large scale apps. So with that, let's do a quick lap of federations. And that is up, isn't it? So what we'll do, SQL Server Management Studio 2012. I'm going to start by connecting. So SSMS 2012 now has native support for working with SQL Azure. It's not quite as draggy, droppy, clicky, clicky as you might like. There's still plenty of T-SQL to be written, but hey, we're all like advanced DB people, so we love cutting T-SQL. I'm going to start by creating a database. And then I'll connect to that. Okay, so next up I create my federation. So we are doing a simple customer orders scenario here. So I'm going to create a customer federation using customer ID, using BigInt as my federation key. So we're effectively going to chop our database up by customer ID. And there are some views that we can use that will actually come back and tell me a little bit about my newly created database and my federations, right? So you'll see at the moment, you know, I have my federation defined, and I have just one federation member, right? That means that my current federation member will contain all of the data from -9 to the power of quite a lot, right, to the other end of sort of, you know, 128-bit address space, right? Big. So, what we'll then do is we need to connect to our Federation member. So we're just going to connect to the Federation member, use Federation, customer Federation, pass them a customer ID. We just pick any theme within that, you know, within our entire range, and that's going to connect us to the correct Federation member. And then we'll go through and create our tables. So we're creating the tables before we do any splitting, right? Because we don't want to have to go through and manage sort of schema updates across all of our Federation members. So I'm just going to create a customer table and an orders table. And stuff some data in them. Okay. So the next thing to talk about, and we'll talk about this in a bit more detail soon, is that we have a concept of filtering, filtering on, filtering off. When we turn filtering on, it basically restricts the data that we can work with in the federated tables inside a member to only rows that contain the federation key that we pass in. Right? So at the moment, we're working with filtering off. And that means when we run our queries, in particular this last one, you'll see that the range of data that we've got is we see the full range of data, right? From 22 to 210. Now let's split that. Now split is an asynchronous operation. So basically it's submitting a job to SQL Azure, and then SQL Azure is going away in the background and creating these new databases, moving the appropriate rows, ensuring that transaction load is, you know, that effectively it reconciles them all the way through to the final point where it changes over your connections to the new databases. And we can use one of these dynamic management views. Please do not crash on me. So we have some dynamic management views that we can use to watch what's going on there. And you'll see I've got a percent complete. This is a little like watching paint dry, but it is actually reasonably quick. This is the reason, by the way, that SQL Azure has a size limit on the databases it supports, right? Because it basically runs three copies of every database, three transactionally consistent copies of every database. And when you write to your database, right, it does synchronous transactional commits across all three replicas. Reason it does that, they're on commodity hardware. If one goes away, it will then spin up another one, bring it back to transactional consistency, and you're off and rolling again, right? 150 gigs is a lot of data to move around the data center to bring your new database back online. Right? It started at 10 gig, right? So it's improving. But that's the reason that there is a size limit there. Okay, so I'm now split. 150 gig. Yeah, 150 gigs. So if I have a look now at my Federation members, you'll see I've now got two Federation members. So I've got one from that runs from sort of absolute minimum through to ID 100, one that runs from ID 100 through to the absolute maximum. So if we connect to the second Federation member with filtering off, right, you'll see I'm now picking up from 100 through to 210. And if I do a select star from customer, I am going to pull back all of the customer records that happen to sit inside that Federation member. If I turn filtering on, what am I going to see? Who wants to hazard a guess? What are these last two queries going to give me? All the rows? Got filtering on. Right? So it's basically going to lock me down and only let me work with rows in my federated table that have the ID, customer ID of 100. Right? That it's a very nice feature because it stops me from doing stupid stuff. Right? And we like that. Okay, so there is some basic support inside SQL Server Management Studio to work with federations. I go find my database. It always takes your chances doing cloud demos. All right, the internet might go down, the cloud might go down. So, oh, come on, that wasn't as useful as I'd expected. You get choices to data center location. So there are 4 data centers in North America. So effectively East Coast, West Coast, North Central, South Central. There are 2 in Asia, Singapore and Honkers. And then there are 2 in Europe. So there's 1, I think, in the Netherlands and 1 island. I'll try that again. Yeah, so you can pick any of those data centers. At the moment, your database lives in one data center. We'll talk a bit about geo-replication later. Geo-replication is, I'm sure you are all very aware, is a very hard problem. In terms of having strong consistency over geographic locations. Your 3 copies are all in the same data center, but what they do with those 3 copies is they endeavor to place them in parts of the data center that should not fail together. They effectively call them availability zones. So you're not going to have 3 copies sitting on the same server. You're not going to have 3 copies sitting in the same rack, right? They are going to be spread around the data center, so hopefully if someone goes and kicks the power out in one corner of the data center, it doesn't take all 3 copies offline at once. Okay, so there's my TechEd database. And we can now see the federations. And you can see those federations from the SQL Database Management portal as well, so the online portal that you get. If you go to www.azure.com, sign into the portal at the top left, you'll get some basic view of your databases. And that's the HTML5 portal. To get to the SQL management portal, you actually need to click your database, go down to the bottom, click manage, and that'll take you to another site, which is the old style Silverlight that they haven't managed to rewrite into HTML5 yet. Okay, and before we go back to the deck, I'm just going to kick off one more split, so I'm now splitting it into an additional federation step. Okay, let's keep on pushing on. So, when we work with these federated schemas, we have 3 different, sort of call them styles or types of table. We have federated tables, and those are the tables that sit in the federated members, and they contain just a slice of the data, right? So just a slice of the data that's defined by the range of federation keys that are being handled by that federation member. That is where you put your data, right, that you need to do read-write operations against, right, at scale. And remember, these are single databases, so our transaction scope is bounded by that federation member. We don't have any support for cross-database transactions, and you kind of want to avoid doing that anyway, right, because as soon as we start trying to do cross-database transactions, we start running into scalability problems. We then have reference tables. So reference tables are tables where they're not federated, right? We haven't defined a federation on them. They don't contain any data that includes the federation key. But we do spread them out across all of the databases. So effectively, they're tables where we create a copy of the data in every single federation member database. They are copied when we do a split, right, but they're not updated. There's no way of automatically updating, so I can insert into a reference table and it gets automatically spread out across all databases. We need to handle that ourselves using what we call a fan-out query. We'll talk about that again shortly. But those are effectively the tables that you'd use for at-scale read operations. Finally, we have a central table. Those are tables that we create in the federation root database. And really, you never want user transactions to be touching a central table, right? Because you've basically got a single choke point. In terms of picking your federations, it's a little like database design. It is an art as much as it is a science. right? But basically normalize your data model as you would through the third normal form or beyond as you see fit. And then look at sort of effectively applying some scale-first database design principles. So we need to look for groups of tables where ideally we can draw a transactional boundary around them, right, in terms of the common operations that we're going to take. So a table group is basically, you know, groups of tables that are all related through foreign key relationships. So, you know, a really good example is that customer, order, order lines, right? What do we do with products? How might we handle products? Reference tables, right? Why? Well, because products are important, but do we need hard transactional consistency? You know, possibly not. So, you know, we can deal with eventual consistency for products, so we might use reference tables for products. Right, because we're not going to be modifying products at scale.
One question about your reference tables.
Yes.
If you've got something that's high use, is there any support to run that out of your cache?
Yeah, absolutely. So nothing stops. So the question was, if you've got, you know, when you're dealing with reference tables, anything to stop you from using the cache? No, absolutely not. Right. So reference tables would commonly be cached.
Does SQL database actually exist in the cache as well?
No. So SQL databases, there's no sort of specific support for SQL database in the cache. Yeah, but you know, central tables would commonly sit in your cache, right? Reference tables probably would sit in the cache, but it's kind of nice to have the data in the database as well, because you want to join in the database, right? I mean, the reason you want it in the database is because you want to join, you want to, you know, do all those sorts of things inside the database. As soon as you pull it out and say, "We'll rely on it being in the cache," you're joining back in code. Yeah. Yeah. Nothing stops you from using caching here, but where you want to sort of join and query within the database, right, using SQL, you know, you can effectively treat your reference tables a little bit like a cache that you've got to update yourself. Yep. So millions of records in your reference table. You need to remember that you are limited at 150 gig. Right, so you've got some sort of choke on a per member basis. It's either going to be volume, got more than 150 gig of data, or it's going to be transactional throughput. I would posit that for most scale out applications, it's transactional throughput, right? Because if you've got large volumes of data, sort of beyond, you know, if 150 gig is not enough to store, you know, if you're hitting that size threshold, you're probably sticking binary data in your database, and you shouldn't be doing that anyway, right? Please, if you go away with just one thing to remember, woe betide anybody who puts binary data in a SQL Azure database, right? Absolute no-no. Right? It's 64 times more expensive than storing it in Windows Azure Storage if you've got large binary data sticking in Windows Azure Storage and store a pointer to it back in the database. Right? There's absolutely no reason to store large binary blob data in SQL Azure because there's no support for iFilters and so forth to index it, so you'll never be querying on it. Yeah, so the question is, do they need to be aware of the structure of the federation? They need to be aware that it's federated because they need to be aware of what the atomic unit is. But they're going to go use federation passing in customer ID of 100, and beyond that, they don't need to have any additional concerns as to the fact that it's federated. They don't need to know how many members there are and so forth. Right? You don't need to maintain a partition map. In terms of picking your federation key, right, ultimately this is largely defined by the tables that you choose as your federation members, and it's often going to be reasonably obvious. Right? What you do have to remember is that ultimately your federation key defines your atomic unit, because that's the smallest unit, right? It's effectively what as highly sharded as you can get. Right? Customer ID is the federation key, right? The smallest you can go is one customer per database. Right? If we're Walmart and we can't handle Walmart on a single database, we've got a major design problem. Right? So you do need to choose that sort of stuff carefully. Reference tables, as we said before, they're basically cloned to all members when we do a split. Right? They allow us to join inside each Federation member, so we can, you know, take advantage of the fact that they are actually in the database. But we do need to go and manage those manually. Right? So they really are our lookup tables that we're going to use under heavy load. They do not have strong consistency. Right? And the reason for that is you have multiple copies of the data once in every single database, and you need to take responsibility for going and updating that. There are no cross-database transactions, and indeed you would never want to do a cross-database transaction that went through and updated your reference tables. No, right? You probably don't want to update, so you would need to think, how do I handle that, right? And you probably, you know, the question was, you know, product and stock, right? The stock balance. You know, how would I handle that? I would probably handle that using some sort of compensatory behavior, right? So I would always try and assume that it was in stock, and then I would go and hit the database that actually has the balance, right? And fail hard. Come back and take some compensatory action to roll that back out. Unique keys. There wasn't a question over there, was there? No. So, identity property is not allowed on federated tables. Who can tell me why? Well, how are you going to keep them consistent? Well, I could keep them consistent by just putting the identity generator in the federation route. I mean, I sort of can. I could put the counter in the Federation route, but that basically gives me a single point where pretty much every single transaction that hits my 1,000 database-wide cluster all goes back to the one server to go and get an identity value. All right? Not good karma. So, I mean, identities are nice, but basically because we have that shared counter, shared stuff don't scale. Right? And this is, you know, the battles over ints versus unique identifiers have waged certainly as long as I've been involved in IT. You should strongly consider using a unique identifier, and if a unique identifier is not big enough, you can use var binary, and that'll give you up to 900 bytes. Right. So you can make big keys. Why is the unique identifier as GWID particularly nice? They are unique. Right, so it's a really nice property because it means that we can generate them in any tier of our application. And they provide a really nice distribution over an enormous address space. Who can tell me what a GWID actually is? Exactly, it's the hexadecimal representation of a 128-bit integer. Right, that is a very large number. That's how we can guarantee that uniqueness. Right, and the nice thing is that the GWID function, right, does a really good job of giving you a nice random distribution, right? Because if we think about how we want to fill up our databases, we want to sort of fill them up pretty much equally as we go along. If we use the GWID function, right, we basically get a nice random distribution of numbers, which means that we key into the databases and they roughly fill up equally. So, you know, the GWID is going to be a common approach to generating your federation key. Not for everything, there will be scenarios where you actually want to key using something else. Okay, then it comes to how do we deal with this from an application programming point of view. So the first thing we need to understand is this idea of data-dependent routing. So data-dependent routing is the mechanism that frees us from having to have our application know about how many federation members we've got. Right? Because if you think of how you do a typical sharding pattern, or how we used to do sharding, you would know exactly what all your databases were. You'd keep some sort of map, you'd probably cache that map, right? And as you added a new federation, as you added a new shard, you'd have to go and update your cached map, and you would do all the work needed to find the appropriate connection string to point your app at the right database for the particular work that you wanted to do. The used federation statement, where we pass in the federation key, will route us to the correct database. And it'll route us to the correct database when we're under that split operation, right? So we get pointed at the right database, the split's going on, And as we need to change, it's going to disconnect us. When we reconnect, right, it'll route us to the new database. We spoke before about this idea of filtering. So when we turn filtering on, all of the work that we do, right, has to be restricted to just the records that relate to that particular federation key value. Right? So we are basically working with a single atomic unit at that point in time. You should try and do most of your work in your application with filtering on. Right? If you're finding you're having to turn filtering off, right, and you're not touching more than one, you're not doing a fan-out query, you've probably got some sort of breakage in your fundamental database design. All right, so you probably need to go back and have a look at that. When we turn filtering off, we have unrestricted access to that federation member. So it's basically just as though we've connected to that database and we can knock ourselves out, right? Full DDL, create table, do whatever you want. Full DML, access to all the atomic units that happen to be housed within that member. You still can't insert stuff that falls outside the range covered by that federation member, right? But you do have access to, you know, everything that is stored in that federation member. So, important for schema management, fan-out queries, right? We want to potentially go and pull aggregates of the data on each and every one of our federation members. It is unsafe. You can potentially break the overall consistency of your database. So, fan-out query. So, fan-out, the problem we've got now is we basically got this database that we'd like to think is a single database, but it's actually 1,000 databases. We've got customer orders in the database, correct? Because we've got customer federation, so the orders are spread out over 1,000 databases, and we want, and some CX level boffin says, I want to get our average order value. And we go, it's a little hard. So we need to run some sort of query that basically goes and queries across every single one of those federation members. So, you know, your fan-out queries are queries that need to go and touch every single federation member, right? They will always be an eventually consistent query. You don't get, you know, snapshot isolation across 1,000 databases. You don't want that, right? So, sorts of things we're going to use those for. Reporting queries, right? Just running aggregates across all of our data. Unaligned queries. So, for example, we want to query to find a customer by name where we don't have the customer ID. Right. You need to think about that second one. That second one's really important, right? Because that second one is going to give you some idea of, actually, you need to think about how you're going to use this database, right, before you go and design it. You know, we need to go and look up the, we need to do a login, okay? Customer enters their email address and a password, and we want to go and find the customer by email address and then look up their password hash and check it. If a login operation requires a fan-out query that spans 1,000 databases, we have a problem. So it may be that you actually separate out customer and the login approach, right, and handle those two differently, right? So you effectively, you federate your logins table by login ID, so that then when the customer gives you their login ID, you can choose to data-dependent route to the appropriate federation member for the database that contains their logins. Is that clear to everybody? In terms of sort of types of your fan-out queries, a super simple one, union all, right? You know, go trawl across every database and just build me an aggregate result set. And then, you know, dealing with fan-out queries that use aggregates, right? Because not all aggregates are summative, right? So we go through, if we're going to do a count, that's pretty easy, just sum the whole lot up, right? If you're going to go and do an average, you can't do that, right? Because it's not the average of the averages. Everybody groks that, right? The overall average order price is not the average of the average order price in every single federation member. And we'll have a look at that one as a worked example again shortly. In terms of writing the fan out query, we basically need to do a couple of things. The first is we need to write a query that goes and gets executed in every single member database. And then if we need to do some sort of post-processing, right, you know, so in the case of, say, getting the total number of orders, we'd need to go and do a count query on each member database, and then we'd need another query that would go and sum those count queries in code. Right, so we go through, you know, basically loop across each Federation member in some fashion, and then perform some post-processing on the resulting data set. And I've actually got some code I'll throw on my blog that shows you how to do that. Yeah. Oh, I was being slack and lazy. So when I ran my sample script, my sample script is not best practice. The reason I used integer is because I wanted some sample data, and so I went to AdventureWorks, and someone, bless them, back in about 1994, decided that AdventureWorks would be keyed on an auto number, probably back in Microsoft Access, because that was kind of all the rage back then. And so I grabbed that sample data, and so that's what I did. Now, you want to try and avoid having, you know, any sort of identity column auto number sort of crap. GUIDs are the way to go for this type of approach. Yeah, GUIDs federate nicely, right? As I said before, so GUIDs federate nicely because the GUID algorithm generates a unique random number, right, that's randomly distributed across the full 128-bit address space. So what that means is we're going to get a nice flat distribution, and we can then just go and chop it, right? So start with one database, okay, chop it in half, right, at the halfway between -2 to 128, +2 to 128, right? Okay, chop it next, chop it next, chop it next, chop it next. We actually know exactly where our split points are if we want to just chop it up. Would I ever consider using date? So date's an interesting one. Yes, I would consider using date, particularly for a database where it wasn't changing a lot. The problem with using date, right, is that you'll often get in a situation where the most recent date is the hottest partition, right? So let's say we partition the orders in our database by date. We end up in a situation where all the historical orders, right, from sort of 99, they're in their own database. And then the most recent orders from 2012, they're in their own database. And we're taking a whole lot of orders. We're not taking many orders right now for 1999, right? So we end up with a really hot shard. Now that may be okay if what we're really interested in is not dealing with transactional load, but just literally going through and filling up buckets, right? Okay, 150 gigs of that, right? Next, 150 gigs of that, next. That's fine. If you're sharding for transactional load, date will often get your fingers burnt, right? Because you end up with that most recent date part shard just being hot, hot, hot. Does that answer your question? One point about the pseudocode, and the code I've got does two variants. One is it does something like this, which is a simple while loop. All right? Who can tell me what's wrong with a simple while loop? Perf. This is pseudocode, just, you know, PowerPoint code. Right? The big problem is that this is a network-bound operation, right? So the biggest impact to perform this is the hop that we're taking from our middle tier, our web tier, across to the database server each time. So each time we go through the while loop, right, go execute the query, okay, we'll hop 30 milliseconds across the network, run, we'll hop back, and actually that run, you know. It just screams to do this in parallel, right? So the code I've got will actually show you how you do it in parallel. So just spin up, you know, use task parallel library and off you go. So, quick look at a fan out demo. We're tracking pretty well for time. Okay, so we saw before that we should now have three partitions. And I have a little sample tool here. You can actually go hit this Federations utility, and I'll post this URL. It's just publicly thrown in a Windows Azure web role, and you just go use this to hack around. I'm going to post all the scripts so you can create the database and the tool and so forth. No deployment required, you just need a SQL Azure database. So let's start by just doing a simple count in each member. So this is going to go across all of my members and get a count. So you know I had 3 members, right? So it's going to give me the count in each member of the number of customers. Again, I could just do a simple query to batch up all of the customers, and you'll see, you know, I've got every single customer spread out across those 3 Federation members. This is basically going through doing that where loop for me. So that's the easy stuff. It starts to get a whole lot more interesting when we start thinking about aggregates. So in this one, right, I want to get the total order values of customers having a total order value greater than 1,000. And this is actually not too bad. And why is it not too bad? It's what we call an aligned query. And an aligned query is where the grouping operator that we're using, right, the grouping operand is aligned to our federation key. Right? So what that means is that we're never having to, we're not doing any grouping across federation member boundaries. Right, it's all bound within that single atomic unit. So that should be hunky-dory. And again, you know, just because we add, just because it's, remember, it doesn't mean that it can be the only grouping operator. It just means that all the things we group by have to effectively have dependency on that atomic unit ID. Right? So, yep, customer ID is the federation key. First name is dependent on customer ID. Last name is dependent on customer ID. Company name, at the moment in my crappy database structure, is dependent on customer ID. So we can run that. And off we go.
Like
correct. So, exactly. So what if we want to do it by company name? Okay, well, that gets a little bit more interesting. So let's do that. All right, so in this case, I am getting the order total by customer name, right? So this is a non-aligned query, right? It's a non-aligned query, and you'll see that because you'll see I've got 2 entries for Rally Master Company because I have 2 customers, individuals in there, who work for Rally Master Company. They have different IDs, they're in different member databases. Right? So it's a non-aligned query, but it is a simple additive aggregate. So it is actually pretty simple for me to just run a post query and sum that up. So if I jump over here and I've got a more advanced utility. So literally to run this, you just copy in your database and your password. My password for the purpose of today is 1MyTPassword. I'm changing that as soon as this is finished. Don't know what it's going to be next week in Australia. Right, so the tool supports effectively that 2-phase querying, right, where I have my first query that we just saw. Right, and then I can do that post-processing query. So in this case, I'm just going to then go through and again sum up the order total by company name and hopefully reasonably obvious what that's going to do. Nice and simple, it gives me the totals by company. So that one's reasonably easy. Okay, so next let's think about an aligned query with non-additive aggregates. All right, so the average order size per customer. So in this case, I am grouping by customer ID. But then I just want the overall average order size, right? So if I want the overall average order size, I can't just do this, right? And the reason I can't just do that is the average of the averages is not the overall average. So what I actually need to do is I need to think a bit more about it. I need to break out and actually get my first query to get me the sum total of all the order values and the count of all the orders, and then actually do the averaging, right, down in my summary query. Right, so in this case, I'm getting the total number of orders and the total order value. Right. So count of the orders, sum of the order value, and then I'm applying the average in my summary query. Right. And so the average is 670. Back to deck, it tells me. That's good. I am going to run out of time if I'm not really careful. Okay, so administration. All you really need to know here is once you have split, each federation member is a completely distinct and independent schema. Therefore, you can change the schemas at will, turn filtering off, go and apply your DDL. It does also mean that you can get yourself into a pile of crap because you go and have a completely different schema in all of your member databases. So you need to think about how you do schema management. That's easy enough to do. Simply run a fan-out query, right, to go through and do that schema management. Be conscious of the challenges that will present you once you're under load and all of the other things that come with updating database schema for running applications. Endeavor to have idempotent scripts, so that means that the script has the same result no matter how many times you run it. In terms of configuring your federation layout, so layout is really the number of federation members that I have. What are my federation members going to be and what are my split points? If all you're really after at the end of the day is to be equally full partition members, you're using a GUID, you know exactly where your split points are going to be all the way through to having, you know, one member database per atomic unit, right? I suspect you'd probably run into credit card limit issues there. You need to think about how is my application bound, right? Is it bound by data volume, right? Or is it going to be bound by transactional load? And again, I posit that in most scenarios, you are aiming to use federations to scale out to deal with transactional load. You know, what do you expect your load to be, right? And therefore, have a plan as to what your splitting approach is going to be. Take advantage of the throughput benefits of SQL Azure, because every SQL Azure database, well, in most cases, as a rule of thumb, SQL Azure databases are going to end up living on separate nodes inside the data center, right? And you know, it's governed only by data size. So you buy a 10 gig database, you have the potential to take full advantage of the whole database server that you're sitting on. A complete side topic that we won't get into about, you know, when you get throttled and so forth. Talk about that afterwards if you want to. But suffice to say, more small databases are better. All right, so endeavor to have more small databases if you possibly can. You can use a bunch of dynamic management views to determine where and when to split. Ideally have some metrics that you monitor to try and identify when you're going to split. You know, concurrent requests, how many users have I got on the site, am I getting throttled by the database throttle, and then split at that point in time. Be careful not to overshoot. One, overshooting means you're going to start spending more money than you really need to. Two, when you overshoot, it is very hard to come back because there is no merge operation. And again, you are aiming to split, right, so that you are, whether it's volume or load is equally distributed across all your federation members. I'm going to skip that demo. It's in the script because we're running out of time. Recent changes. So I mentioned it earlier. There have been some improvements around the use federation operation, which provides better connection pooling at the gateway node. So the way SQL Azure works is effectively your application, right, talks TDS, the Tabular Data String Protocol, to a thing called a gateway node. A gateway node is a server in the Windows Azure data center that, for all intents and purposes, looks and smells like a SQL server, but it's not. It's basically a proxy, and it receives your TDS connection, and it then proxies it through to the underlying database nodes. All right? So there's just better connection pooling that means that ultimately you don't have as many connections in really massive scale scenarios, i.e. where you've got 50 web servers talking to 50 database federation members. Right? You end up with 500 connections versus 25 connections dealing with, you know. Coming to next quarter, so there's going to be some support for identity and timestamp columns on reference tables, but reference tables only. Right, and your federation members. At the moment, you can't have an identity column on your reference tables. Right? You will still not be able to have identity columns in federated tables, and I hope that none of you desire for that. We're going to have support for the data sync service. The data sync service basically provides sync between various database copies, be they on-premise, be they in the cloud. That does present some interesting opportunities to deal with merge, because what you can potentially do is use data sync to re-aggregate the data back into a single federation member, right, before you go and drop the other members. So there's a new operator coming, which is this concept of switch. Switch allows you to switch federation members in and out. It's going to let you do a bunch of interesting things. One is easy ways of copying databases out, potentially taking snapshots out. You know, if a customer wants you to take a daily backup, for example. Point-in-time restore is coming as well for federation members. Sorry, I am being rushed now, unfortunately. It's going to provide potential support for an eventually consistent merge. So what you'd do is you'd swap your members out, right? You'd then drop and collapse, right? So basically throw away the members that you just swapped in, and then you'd copy, potentially using data sync, the data back into the single federation member. So that's going to give you at least some mechanism to support an eventually consistent merge. That is me. I have run slightly over. My watch says 1 minute past 10, and that is GPS accurate. So the guys at the back will know that I was working really hard to keep to time. I am going to post on my blog, the Savo, the scripts that I ran through, and a link to the tool, and a link to the source code for the tool. But actually, you don't really need the source code for the tool, apart from maybe cribbing the fan-out stuff to use in your own apps, because you can jump to that link and use the pre-deployed copy. I'm on Twitter, at C-A-U-L-D. It is a mixture of political ramblings and technology, so if you offend it easily, don't go there. But my blog is a whole lot more sane, and will have some great technical information. Jihan, whose last name I cannot for the life of me pronounce, is the Federation's PM, and he has some great stuff on fan-out queries and things on his blog site as well. We have been very good at taking questions throughout, but I suspect there are still a few questions. One. Yes. How do you generate the Federation key? So the Federation key is just like a standard... It's just like a standard database table key, right? Just like a... Well, so typically what you'd aim to do is you'd aim to use something that you can generate in your application tier, right? So ideally use a GUID for your federation key, right? You wouldn't want to be using auto-incrementing integer. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They probably do apply to SQL Azure. So the question was, if we use GUIDs, we're going to have index fragmentation, blah de blah de blah. It kind of gets painful. And I know I'm acutely aware of index fragmentation with GUIDs because I'm battling one of those problems at the moment. So absolutely that will occur, but there's nothing you can do about it in SQL Azure, right? There's no physical tuning that you can undertake to deal with it, so you kind of just ignore it and get on with it. Yep. No, I mean honestly... Physical tuning doesn't happen in the cloud. So if you're a physical tuning person, sorry, just can't happen. So what I'm going to do, folks, I'm going to take any additional questions over at the Intergen Racing Car booth. Thank you all for coming along. Please do fill out your evals. Good ones, gladly appreciated. Average ones, please come and see me at the booth. No, honestly, I would appreciate your feedback. And thank you for coming along. Hope you all enjoy TechEd.